Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
And I'm Ryan Saul.
I was trying to do kind of a to the beat thing, and it did not play out as I was hoping.
Well, would you like to try it again?
No. Aww, I feel like you didn't follow that. You didn't notice that I was doing that?
No, you should have warned me. Then I could have been on the beat, too, and we would have both sounded great.
I like that because you're tactfully not saying which of us sounded great the first time. So, hi, Rias.
Hi, Monty. How are you today?
I'm all right. Still watching some reality shows.
Yeah, I'm watching those, too.
So, this week, Bachelorette went to hometowns, and that took 2 hours. And I wrote 2 sentences down about it.
Well, I have a lot of memories about it that I've not been able to successfully suppress yet.
So do you want to work through your suppressed or unsuppressed memories and see if you can come to a place of acceptance?
Yeah, let's try doing that.
Okay. As you remember, young Rachel is down to 4 gentlemen. Those 4 gentlemen are Brian, Eric, Peter, and Dean.
And Peter is the one she likes the best.
And Brian is the one she likes making out with the best.
Oh, is he?
Brian's the one from Miami.
Oh, I think Brian's the one she likes best.
Well, she went to Miami. They did some little dancing. They played dominoes.
They did. I don't understand dominoes. It doesn't seem like a game that you're gonna, like chess, where there's like experts at it. It seems far too oriented by chance.
That's how I feel about it. Like, I haven't studied dominoes, but I've looked at dominoes, and it's not
a strategy game so much.
Like, there's a lot of people who play dominoes a lot and very competitively, so I assume I'm missing something, but it's like, have you ever read an Old West book or something, and they're all playing Faro? Like, at the beginning of Deadwood, there's a Faro game. There's no game in Faro, but it was incredibly popular.
Yeah. Checkers.
Checkers.
They're always playing checkers, and there's some strategy in checkers.
Hang on. I love checkers.
Uh-oh. Now I've started it.
See, when I was in 11th grade...
Oh, God. Here we go.
We had this computer system that I believe was a DEC 10 or maybe a PDP, an old-timey, huge mini-computer. And I was screwing around in computer class, and I found a checkers game hidden. And it was a very skilled checkers game. It took me all semester to learn how to beat it. And I was very proud of myself.
I stand corrected.
For that semester, I was an expert checkers player. And my favorite thing about it is that when I finally won, it just had a single line that said, "You win." Not even an exclamation point, just... You may have spent 3 months learning this strategy game.
Congratulations.
The thing that makes it tricky is that you have to take a jump if it's available to you.
Okay.
A lot of casual play doesn't involve that, but if you can force your opponent to take a jump, then you can control his movements. I feel like we've gotten off topic a little bit already.
A little bit. So they played some dominoes in Miami.
Yes, they did.
And then I believe she went to meet his family, and he's the one whose mother ruined his last relationship.
Yeah, because she didn't like his girlfriend or something.
And she's a little crazy. I thought she looked a little crazy in the eyes. She is super possessive of her son.
Yeah.
She's like, "If you break his heart, I will kill you."
A little louder.
"If you break his heart, I will kill you."
Thank you, Natasha.
You're welcome.
It was really more of a Cuban accent, I thought.
Look, I have one accent.
That's fine.
That is also my Spanish accent and my French accent.
Oui, Boris. It was a nice house. They had a giant painting of food right above the dinner table. And she seemed to have fun. Like, that seemed like a perfectly acceptable...
They seem nice.
...hometown date.
If they ever want to move any place besides Miami, I think there's going to be trouble. Because the mother was very clear that family... always comes first.
Yeah.
She was a little bit daunting, but...
Now, Brian, at the end of the date, said the magic words, which are, "I'm in love with you."
Right. Earlier, who did she go on the date with before?
The first date was Eric, who is from Baltimore, so they got some cool shots of boarded-up windows. And I liked Eric's family a lot.
I liked Eric's family a lot. Eric's not from, like, the richest part of Baltimore. I don't think he's from... I don't think he's from The Wire, but I'd say, you know, where normal people are in Baltimore. Yeah. And his family seemed like nice, normal people who were
his aunt
happy.
His aunt that talked to him was really on point when she was talking to Rachel. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, she was not pulling any punches. She was asking the right questions.
So Eric, at the end of his date, which also went fine, like, I liked his family more than Brian's, but whatever. Eric said, "I love you." And by that I mean, your happiness is important to me. And for
what, by that I mean, I care about you.
Well, what Rachel took away from that is he didn't say the words. So, "I'm in love with you" is the goal. And "I love you," that does not reach the goal. Now, I liked when Eric said that because by defining his terms, I felt that showed that he meant what he was saying more. Like, he's not just saying the words you are supposed to say at hometown.
He's saying, "I love you, and what I mean by that is that I care about what happens to you, and I want to take care of you." That's what he said, but it is not what she heard.
Yep.
Someone else said, "I'm falling in love with you," and that is absolutely the wrong answer at
this
point. That
was Peter. Peter is from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. They went to a lake or something.
Yeah. I think that's the lake that Jim Mallon put the top of the Statue of Liberty in when he did that famous college prank.
Famous.
Famous. My notes here on Peter are the word Madison and the word indecisive. So they went on these cool ATVs that looked like fun.
And they rode out to some hay bales and they had a picnic.
Yeah. Then they met his family. I don't remember anything about his family at all.
I don't either. That's alarming.
So Peter's thing is he doesn't want...
He's not ready to open up.
Yeah, he's not there quite yet. So he's still saying, if I'm not feeling it, I won't propose. Going down on one knee. Everybody talks about going down on one knee. It's the only way to propose. Just ask, I don't know, Norman Rockwell, whoever makes these cliches up.
Yeah. I'm not sure I can go on one knee yet. So, well, dude, you've got one or two episodes left. You better get that knee pad warmed up.
So that's the big question about Peter. Will he finally be in love with Rachel?
Or will he be the new Bachelor? It could go either way.
Yeah, based on what we saw tonight, I feel like if Brian isn't picked, he'd be a great new Bachelor.
Yeah, he's got all the makings of a new Bachelor. He's got the artfully arranged facial hair. He's got the broad shoulders. He probably looks nice in a swimsuit.
He'll go along with whatever the show tells him to do.
Yeah, he follows orders blindly and with efficiency. All that stuff. That's what you want in The Bachelor.
And then we got to Dean. Dean is from Aspen, Colorado.
Now, last week we learned that Dean does not get along with his family.
Dean's mother died, and...
when he was 15.
And in Dean's opinion, Dean's father did not step up to take more of a maternal role.
Leaving Dean in charge of his brothers and sisters' emotional well-being.
And Dean is pretty angry about it still.
Dude, he's like Batman with his parents being shot about it. He will not give it a rest. I'm like...
he hasn't talked to his father in 2 years, and Rachel is very concerned about that. It's not clear to me if they live in the same city.
I don't think that they do. Most of these, yeah, I don't think they do live in the same city. And, I mean, I'm not super close with my family that way, but I don't have anything against them, really. It's just we don't see each other that often.
So, Dean preps Rachel by saying things like, his father has given himself a name that means, like, pure beauty or something?
Most beautiful.
Most beautiful. And I want to be very clear. People can give themselves any damn name they want.
Even if it's... what was that name?
I didn't write it down.
I thought I wrote it down, but I can't find any notes on it.
Yes, even if it's a name in another language.
It is a name in another language. He is a yogi?
Turban, long beard. He looks like a yogi.
He does. He's got a long beard. He's got a turban. They don't have any chairs in their house. They just have pillows. Everyone sits on the floor. He seemed eccentric, but nice.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of signs on the wall that say love is the power and all that stuff.
He seemed like a sincere member of the Sikh religion to me. He served vegetarian food with mung beans, which I always think of more of as a hippie thing. But, you know, you're in Colorado. What are you going to do? Rachel seemed to like it.
Yeah, Rachel thought he was nice. He gave him flowers when they arrived. He gave them feathers, which he said symbolized his dead wife. I thought he was super nice.
Dean's brother and sister were there, and Dean's father had everybody lie down.
Dean's brother's pretty hot. And hotter than Dean.
Closed their eyes, and then he kind of rang a gong. Not just wang, but, you know, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And everybody's closed their eyes and enjoying it, and Dean's eyes are open, and his teeth are clenched, and he could not hate this more.
No, he was so miserable. It was... I thought, like, steam was going to shoot out of his ears in the manner of a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, dude, this is supposed to be peaceful meditation. And I think that...
His relationship with his father was getting in the way of him able to even put on a front for Rachel or the TV show, which...
Yeah.
Like, they were served the vegetarian food with mung beans, and Rachel digs in and claims to like it because she's in this situation when you're doing the hometowns... It's like going to a foreign country. You are told, this is a delicacy in my family. And you go, I like whatever this is.
Oh, yeah. Remember on The Bachelor, those homemade olives that guy clearly hated but had to eat and smile? Yeah.
Dean claimed he had already eaten and wouldn't even touch his food.
Yeah. Dean is a big whiny pants crybaby.
It was just super uncomfortable. Eventually, Dean and his father had a showdown, which from Dean's side was... My mother had died and you didn't take care of me. And I think his father was trying to get across, my wife had died and I wasn't in shape to take care of anyone.
It was that, and his father was like, look, I had to work full time to take care of the family financially. And now the person I love most in the world is dead, and I'm sorry I wasn't a great dad, but Dean will not accept that answer.
To be fair, his father also goes with the argument, well, you turned out okay, so I must have done a pretty good job.
He did. He actually said those words, which totally set Dean off and required Dean to have an alone conversation with him, which didn't end well.
So... It was super uncomfortable. Dean's father kind of stormed out, and Rachel tried to have a campfire talk with him, and he was like, my only reason to be talking to you is through Dean. I don't even talk to Dean.
But he was really nice about it. He said, I wish you guys all the best. I hope you have all the love in the world in your life.
But this kind of doesn't have anything to do with me. So then she went back inside with Dean, and then the date was over, and it was so uncomfortable.
It was so uncomfortable.
And then at the end of the show...
Guess who didn't get a rose?
Dean did not get a rose. I feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, I feel like he went through a lot of personal misery in this show tonight.
And he also told Rachel, I'm in love with you. And she told him, I'm in love with you too.
She did. While they were laying on the floor of his father's house right after his father had stormed out.
So that was... I don't know. It was three quarters pretty boring and one quarter super uncomfortable of an episode.
So pretty much like most normal dates.
Based on that, I feel like if Brian isn't picked, he's the next Bachelor.
Absolutely.
If Brian is picked, I think Dean could be the next Bachelor.
Yeah.
I don't want to send Peter in because his whole thing is, I don't fall in love easily. I think that's too remote for the fun-loving center.
Right, Peter doesn't even know if he wants to get married. So if you don't know you want to get married, you got no point being on a show where they're auctioning you off like a piece of meat.
But if Dean comes out and has his big head and is like, hi, ladies, I got my heart broken. Can you fix me? I think that could be a show.
Yeah. Isn't Dean also... Dean's also a chiropractor, I think, so...
Is he? All right.
Well, that's kind of a bonus.
They're all models. Before we get into the next show on our suite of shows, I want to briefly talk about Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Fool Us?
This is one of two competitive reality shows hosted and judged by Penn and Teller.
Really? What's the other one?
The other one is Wizard Wars. That
is
one...
that still on?
Well, it's not on right now, but it's summer. It could come back at any second. It's been...
Wizards. You know how they are.
Wizard Wars has been on the last 2 years, so I think it counts. It's a show where... two magicians get paired up kind of randomly and told, here are some props, make a trick out of them. And they have to do it quickly, and it's charmingly low effort and low budget to me. A lot of times you can see how the trick worked because they weren't able to cover all the edges.
Right.
But I think there's something fun about people looking at their props like, well, CD cases. Could we do a card trick with CD cases? No, that's crazy. What if we, like, what if I, like, threw a CD case at you and it appeared to decapitate you? How would we make that work? I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. Like,
yeah. A lot of that backstage, oh my God, what are we going to do? We have a CD case and a
duck.
Cigarette.
Yeah. But Fool Us, the premise of the show is a magician comes, performs their trick from their act, and if Penn and Teller can figure it out, then the magician loses. But if Penn and Teller don't figure out how they did it, the magician wins. That's the alleged premise. But I don't think it's actually...
Penn and Teller know a lot about magic.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
I mean, first of all, it's mostly Teller who knows this stuff.
But he's not talking.
Yeah. Everybody assumes Teller does all the magic in the act, but Penn's been in a very successful magic duo for decades. At this point, they have Penn do a lot of the sleight of hand just because you're not watching him.
Yeah.
He's got these giant hands. He can palm out a whole deck you won't notice.
He can palm a watermelon.
But what I like about the show is people come out with a trick they know that Penn and Teller know how to do. There was a great act on this last one where a woman came out and had Teller sit next to her at like a stooge from the audience normally would, handed him a piece of paper and had him repeat what she did. And in the most basic terms, she cuts a heart out of the paper, so does he. She rips it up, so does he. And then she restores them.
Except when they're restored, part of her heart is now... Because the hearts were different colored papers. So part of his heart has been patched with a part of her heart.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Now, because she got Teller to do that with her, he's doing the pantomime along with her and selling it. Because he knows how the story of this act goes immediately. And he's great at pantomime. Especially
right.
Pantomime to put over the story of a magic trick. And it doesn't matter that obviously Penn and Teller both know how she did the trick. In fact, while we were watching it, Ryze commented, it's very convenient for a woman. She gets to bring out a purse.
Right.
She doesn't have to be littered with secret pockets and stuff. But really, the purpose of this show is for Penn and Teller to find acts they like and give them a national stage.
Absolutely.
Whenever they know how an act was done, which is most of the time, they will spend a lot of time lavishly praising not just the act, but what was different about the act.
Right. It's like, oh, we've done that act before, but we never thought to use paper hearts.
Yeah.
Or,
like,
you know.
I like that when you did the sword box trick, you used a cardboard box that doesn't look like you just went to a magic shop and bought it. So, really, it's just a magic show with different acts, and then sometimes somebody gets a special bonus of having fooled Teller.
Right.
So, I think...
It's a really good show. I like it a lot. I like seeing how different magicians approach the same trick.
I will say, it has made me super sick of mentalists.
I've always disliked mentalist acts. I just don't like them.
Every mentalist act seems like it takes forever for people to pick six numbers or whatever, and then forever to reveal it. And then when it's revealed, there's really only one way that trick could have been done, so what were we doing?
Yeah.
So... except for the mentalism, which I'm sick of, I think Fool Us is a neat show just for the seeing different styles of magic all come out.
They had that one guy on that time that was doing those amazing card tricks, but he didn't have hands.
Yeah.
That guy is incredible.
And he had a big bonus against Teller, because Teller knows everything about card tricks and magic history, except all of the diagrams assume you got hands. Somebody comes out with no thumb. Well, what do you do now, Teller? I'm not crazy about the way the show kind of encourages me to stare at the magic tricks to figure out how they were done, but I was kind of doing that anyway.
The guy's name is Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I, Gilbert.
Yeah, he's super
good. Check him out online. He's really good. And it's not just he's good with no hands, he's just really good at magic, and he's discovered and invented a new way of doing
it.
And that is so cool.
And that's what's fun is... there's not really... like, I guess there's America's Got Talent, but there's not that many places for... international magicians to display their work to me, and this helps them do that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is technically I don't know that we've defined exactly the genre of the villain edit. Fool Us seems a little outside it. Wizard Wars is on theme, but as you say, it's not necessarily being aired right now.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, fool us with Penn and Teller, or Penn and Teller fool us, or whatever order the names go
it's
in.
It's a good time. I like Penn and Teller a lot. I could do without Penn yelling at me so much, but that's because he's giant and I'm only 5 feet tall, and even on television, that's intimidating.
Yeah. I mean, even if I agree with you, Penn, relax. I will say that...
Yeah, and I do often agree with him on those things.
You know, I saw Penn and Teller get killed in the theaters, which was not easy because it came out on a Friday and was gone by Tuesday.
Wow.
That was not a successful theatrical run.
No. We play it in the store every once in a while on video, and people are like, is that Penn and Teller? They're so young.
So young. All right. Forged in Fire is a show where people make knives out of raw metal.
What? They don't use cooked metal?
No. Well, they cook it themselves.
Oh.
My favorite guy this time out was a guy named Paul, who brought a pyrometer, which is a device that tells you how hot something is.
Right.
His argument was, I like to know how hot it is before I quench it.
Right, because most people, when they quench their metal, they go by the color of the metal and the feel of it. But this guy, he's a scientist.
He is. All of the judge's comments while he was working was, does he have time to be that much of a perfectionist? Is he cleaning his metal too much?
Yeah.
And he wasn't. His metal was great.
On this week's episode, they had to make their signature knife out of a big fat cable. It was like, when I say a big fat cable, I mean a 6-inch around cable.
Bigger than that, I think.
It's the kind of thing you would use if you had to support, say, a Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah. So the first thing that, a Golden Gate Bridge, if you had one.
If you had one, yeah.
So the first thing they did, all four contestants worked together to unwind it a bit so they would each get a chunk of inch thick cable instead.
Right.
And the judges were just amazed that the contestants were doing this. But what else are they supposed to do?
Yeah, were they just supposed to chop off a 6-inch slab of metal? No, it makes sense. Unscrew a piece of it and divide it amongst yourselves, which they did.
Now, we've seen Forged in Fire enough to know the basics of how you turn cable into a billet of steel.
Right. The first thing you do before anything else is you clean the ends of it, so that they will weld together, and then you weld them together very tightly.
Both ends. It's
right.
Then you heat it up and start twisting it together. Not untwisting it. You twist it together and heat it up and whack it against something to clean off the bits of metal and heat it and twist it and tighten it and tighten it until eventually
it turns into one piece of metal that you can hit with a hammer.
Yeah, the strands weld together. And once that has happened and it's as tight as you can get, then you take it over to the power hammer and start mashing it together.
Pretty much.
Now, one of the blacksmiths' name was Stephen.
Right.
Yep. Young Stephen didn't appear to have welded the ends together.
No, it just exploded. It looked like he was holding a tree in his hand.
So, about halfway through when everybody else is like, all right, I'm getting somewhere, Stephen's had to do something else.
Yeah, he was holding, like I said, it looked like a sculpture of a tree.
Yeah, a whole bunch
branches of branches poking off everywhere.
Flyaway strands. So he just cut off all the strands.
And he decided that he's going to teach himself right now how to make canister Damascus.
Now, we've also watched enough of this show to know how canister Damascus works. What you do is you have a...
canister.
A box, a metal box. You fill it with random bits of metal and powdered metal. The powdered metal fills all the spaces.
Right. First you paint the inside with whiteout.
You should. That doesn't seem to help as much as people think.
Well, so, I would do it.
So you heat it super up, and then you squash it together, hoping that all of the metal inside welds together, and you have made Damascus steel.
Which you can then work.
What you normally do then is remove the outer canister, which is made of soft metal. That part usually takes forever. It's why you were supposed to have put that whiteout on when Raya said, because it's kind of like spraying cooking spray onto your pan.
Right.
Stephen did not do that. He just left the soft canister on. So his billet ended up soft metal on the outside, but hardened metal on the inside. And the theory was that he'd be able to grind off the soft metal on the edge part, thus leaving the hard metal pointed out.
It took forever. He was just standing around waiting for it to heat up forever, like for a long time.
He technically finished in time. His knife looked misshapen and ugly.
Right. Paul, on the other hand, with the pyrometer, he was doing really well because the first thing he said was, well, I'm going to make the simplest shaped knife that I can because I know I'm going to need extra time because I'm a crazy perfectionist.
Yeah, everyone else in the design phase draws like, I'm going to do a double recurve buoy. And Paul was like, straight. I believe it's called a sax. And although the judges were worried about him, he finished on time.
Yeah.
Now, there were also some other guys.
There's a guy named Ryan. He managed to get the billet to sort of melt together, but then when he hit it with the sword, lots of random little pieces of cable kept flying off of it like hair, and it wasn't twisted tightly enough, which meant it had air bubbles in it, which I believe are called inclusions.
Yeah.
And it didn't look good.
Yeah, when the judges can get their thumbnails into cracks in your metal, you're not going to make through round one, yeah. And he didn't.
Yeah, Ryan's blade was full of creases where the cable didn't melt together. It looked like a ball of yarn, a knife-shaped ball of yarn or something. I didn't get it.
The other guy was Robert, who seemed to be doing okay. There was a bit of a warp in his blade after round one. And how do you fix a warp, Rias?
Well, apparently you wait for the blade to cool down. Wrong. And then you stick it in a vise, and then you push and pull on it with all of your might to try and pull it into shape.
Now, I'm no expert blacksmith, but it seems like that would run a risk of snapping your blade in two.
If you've already cooled your blade, why, yes, it would. But you get the crease, you get the bend in the blade from cooling it, so there's really not much of a choice.
So what happened to Robert when he did this exact thing?
I can't imagine. Well, guess what? His blade broke.
And he's like, oh, well, that's bad. He showed it to Paul. Paul's like, well, time to get creative. And Robert did not give up. We have seen people try to weld their blade back together when the snap was like in the handle or something. What Robert ended up doing was making a splint, just taking another chunk of metal.
First he welded the blade together, and then he wrapped it in another chunk of metal and soldered that on to at least provide a spine to the blade.
So there's an extra 2-inch piece of metal along the edge of the, not along the edge, but along the spine of the blade just to try to hold it together.
It doesn't look gorgeous.
Now, he did get through all of the tests at the end of round two.
Yeah, he did manage to get through things.
But the judges were like, well, the crack is right there. We can't let you through. And he fully understood and he went home.
Right. The challenges at the end of round two included a cable chop, which I call another crap challenge where they hit a blade with a hammer and then complain when it gets dents in it.
Now, they didn't say, but I like to think that was part of the same cable they made the thing out of in the first place.
I think it was. I think it was just some scrap cable, because they're not going to go out and buy special cable. Anyway, so then they, oh my. So
they had to make a Nagambe Ngulu, and I don't know if that's how it's pronounced. It's how it's spelled. It is a Central African weapon. It looks kind of like a scythe.
I think it's pronounced Nombinunu.
Okay.
Anyway, it looks like a scythe with... it looks like a sword with a scythe at the tip. It's designed to remove heads, but is now used mostly ceremonially because they don't need to remove as many heads as they used to.
Mostly it looks like people were cutting with the convex edge, so it was kind of a weirdly shaped axe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With some neat stuff on the other end.
Then we get to the home forges where they have to make theirs. And I am incredibly happy to see that Steven, he's the guy that made the Damascus and managed to somehow survive the round. His little forge has big metal spider legs and nuts on it for eyeballs.
Yeah, that
was
cool.
So he has a fire-spitting spider forge, which I thought was super adorable, and now I like him again.
Paul, meanwhile, had both a forge and a heat treat furnace, which I was amazed by.
Yeah.
Everyone else uses the same thing for both.
I really enjoyed that round because Steven looked like he was just kind of making stuff up as he went along based on the little knowledge he had.
Yeah,
whereas
he said
Paul is saying, I need this to be exactly 7 inches long and this angle needs to take up 30% of the blade. And it was really interesting watching the artist versus the scientist.
Yeah, Steven said he'd never done a Damascus, canister Damascus before, which means technically I have as much experience as him.
Yeah, but...
and he certainly did better than I would.
I think so.
Like, I've never even welded anything together.
Anyway, so then they went on, and my last note for the show is, oh my god, Doug beheaded two ballistic dummies!
Yes, we don't care about the other challenges. Just Doug's challenge was with ballistic dummies, as it often happens, but instead of the usual ones where he has to, like, swipe across the abdomen and then stick his fingers in to show how much damage he did, he was doing two things. One, chopping the stomach. Two, because this is a beheading weapon, cutting the head off the dummy.
And we got to watch the heads roll across the ground in glorious close-up. And everyone on the show enjoyed it.
As Doug was super excited, everybody was excited to see it happen.
The guys who made the swords were excited about it.
Both swords did great in all of their tests.
Yeah, they were both actually looked beautiful.
When we first saw them, I thought, that looks dumb. Then Doug starts waving it around, and I think, oh, I see how that works. That looks great.
Yeah.
But in the end, Steven won because Paul had a slight roll on one of his edges.
Yeah, Paul got a slight roll on one of his edges. Didn't they hit it with a hammer? Oh, when they cut something super hard.
That's in the clay pot.
Yeah, they were chopping up clay pots, and his edge rolled a little, like it will, because that's not what knives are for.
And he lost, but he was a gentleman about it, and he went home. Steven won. Congratulations, Steven.
Yeah.
Very straightforward, fun episode of Forged in Fire.
All right.
Now, Ink Master.
Oh, the one I didn't make too. I think, oh, I did make some notes on it, but none of them are things I can say on the radio.
The new team is Boneface Inc., which is made up of a guy named Boneface and a guy named Hobo Inc. Boneface, I like a lot. For one thing, when another team is assigning the human canvases and they give the hardest one to Boneface, Boneface's attitude is, all right, I'm going to do a great tattoo. Every other competitor freaks out.
Yeah, every other competitor snivels about that.
How dare you give me a difficult tattoo? You're coming for me. Are you coming for me? How dare you? Boneface is like, well, that's what happens, man. Like, yeah.
And Boneface's partner that he brought with him is a guy named Hobo Inc. And Hobo Inc. was the first person eliminated on a previous season.
That was in one of those, like, big fair type situations where they had 100 people tattooing and Oliver Peck just wandered through and said, you're out.
Oh, okay.
In Boneface's words, Hobo Inc. is a great artist and Boneface is a solid technician.
Right, so they should be a good team together.
Because he's ready for Hobo Inc. to take the artistic lead, but he's confident in his own ability to tattoo well.
Right.
Now, that already puts them ahead of half the teams, which are full of people yelling at each other about how they should be making all of the creative decisions. Like, there's enough people to yell at on this show. Do you have to be yelling at each other?
The first mini-challenge was to make a stencil design. So basically you get a sticky board, you put tape over it, and then you sprinkle
Powdered velvet. It's a flocking challenge.
Over it, and then you unmask that, and then you mask off a different part, and then you have to do a painting.
Some of them were good, some of them weren't.
The winner was Old Town Ink.
They did what I thought was a pretty cool-looking apocalyptic scene, like city on fire and a guy with a gas mask. People didn't like that it was kind of dirty and messy, but that really worked for their subject matter.
Yeah, it really worked with the subject matter. It looked like something that I can imagine seeing that hanging on a wall in a bar or somewhere.
Like, another team did a really crisp demon that looked great, but honestly, it looked too perfect.
It looked like a tattoo. It didn't look like an art piece, and they were looking for art pieces. So a lot of people were angry because the winner was a sloppily done piece of art, but it was a sloppily done piece of art that made you feel something.
Yeah.
And the others were beautifully done pieces of art which had no soul.
Or several of them were badly done pieces of non-art that should quit complaining and do better.
Amen. So the challenge for this week is an artistry challenge where they have to do a freehand tattoo.
Artistry is the word of the day.
Yes. I don't think anyone knows what it means. I'm not sure I do after watching this episode.
People kept saying things like, we hit the artistry. So they were imagining that there's like an amount of artistry you put in. Doesn't artistry just mean basically how good it is?
I thought that it kind of did, but they used the word so often during this episode that it lost all meaning by the end.
Yeah.
So anyway, they have to freehand a tattoo. One guy draws it on, the other guy tattoos it.
The drawing phase takes 3 hours, and the tattooing phase takes 6 hours. Spare a thought for these poor people who are getting these tattoos.
Yes. Can we talk for a second about Dave Navarro's shirts? I'm a little worried about him. Either, there's one of two things going on. Either his shirts are all wearing out and he can't afford to replace them, which is very sad because they always look full of holes and they're kind of stained up and threadbare. Or he is paying thousands of dollars for shirts that are torn up and threadbare. I fear that it is the latter.
Well, let me propose a third option. Artisanal moths.
Do you think he has a secret stash of them, like in Silence of the Lambs?
I think he has a moth guy. I think the really rich people who want the authentic whole experience bring their clothes to the guy and then come back a month later.
This is a very expensive t-shirt. I'd like to hang it in your closet with your artisanal moths.
Yes. These are the best moths.
You know, I don't think that's true.
They are fed only on Rockstar silks.
Ooh, the finest of Rockstar silks.
It is true that he just had a whole bunch of holes in his clothing. And I guess that's a look on this show.
It's happened a couple of times. It's not just this episode.
Yeah.
But
he's not the worst dressed of the judges.
He's badly dressed. I'm saying that he...
Well, if we're going to call out a judge's dress, I want to talk about Chris Nunez's one outfit that has the sheepskin lapels, and then it's leather down to about an inch below the nipples,
and then it's denim?
Yeah.
That's a very interesting thing. And tonight
and
he was
worn
wearing
it
a
multiple
shirt,
times.
And tonight he was wearing a plaid shirt with bright yellow embroidery on it. It kind of looked like maybe it was SpongeBob SquarePants fighting a snake. I don't know what it was.
Oliver Peck may be annoying sometimes, but he stays on theme. He's like, here's my flannel shirt buttoned all the way up. Here's my toothpick. That's what you get. Let's go.
Yeah. But he was tonight wearing a denim jacket with 9 million different band patches on it, to the point where I'm not sure it would technically count as a denim jacket anymore.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but all the patches looked kind of new and crisp.
Brand new.
Dude, you gotta drag that behind a car for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta roll it in the dirt, drag it behind a car, soften it up so it looks like it's had some wear on it. Then you got something.
So, the challenge.
Artistry.
Yeah. Again, one person freehands it with pen, the other person tattoos it. This is right up Boneface Ink's alley, because we already know Hobo Ink, great artist, Boneface, solid technician. And he is totally fine with that. Later on in the people yell at each other segment, he really gets under people's skin by saying, I'm not an artist, I do tattoos. I'm a technician.
Which drives people up the wall, because one of the other guys ends up screaming at him, no, you can't say that. Art is my life. How dare you say that?
And then I kind of went on this rant at him about how sad it is that this is your life and you're so bad at it. And you're so bad at it on a national television show, too. Everybody can see you being bad. Wouldn't it be...
Why are you being so mean to him? He's not that bad.
Because I'm mad at the television show. What if this was a television show, hear me out, where people got gorgeous tattoos? What if we came on and said, we saw Ink Masters tonight. Oh my God, did you see that one tattoo? It's so beautiful. What about this one? My God, these people are so talented and so nice. I'd like to get a tattoo from any one of them. What a life-changing experience that would be. Because that is not what happens.
Instead, that is not what we get from Ink Master. What we get from Ink Master is these are really unpleasant people who, even when someone does a beautiful tattoo, feel obligated to tell them how awful and hideous it is. They have no appreciation for beauty or actual art.
Yeah.
It's just, come on, guys. Come on.
out of this episode, I mostly liked Boneface because I'm not sick of him yet. And for once, I liked Oliver Peck the best because he was keeping his mean comments short and pithy.
Yes.
Like Allegory Arts tattooed a lion and a rose. And Oliver did not like the rose. He said it was shaped like a tulip. And he was right. And Allegory Arts defended themselves. Blah, 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 blah.
They said, well, it's artistry. We thought that meant we could be more creative.
And he said, well, I heard him. He said he wanted a lion and a rose. He got a lion and this. Like, good one. You called it out. You described what the problem was.
Yep. It was a nice lion, though.
Yeah. As usual, one of the pieces of one of the tattoos that nobody wanted, somebody came out and said, I want two turntables and some headphones.
And now I want a hand on a turntable and some headphones.
And people will freak out because turntables, those have to be perfectly round or really oval because you're looking at them at an angle.
And you can't freehand that.
But Ein Kindness Art did freehand it, and it looked great.
Yeah, they actually had they had used the guy getting the tattoo, who's the DJ, they used his hand as the model. They had him put it on the table like he was putting a record around.
They had him put his hand on the sketch pad, then he drew it on the sketch pad and said, that looks good. Then he drew it onto the guy's flesh.
It had his wedding ring on it and everything. It was really good.
Some of these people really can draw really well.
Yes. Let's see. And Boneface was given what everyone thought was the second worst tattoo, which was it Boneface that had to do an octopus, a neck octopus?
Yeah. The person said, I'd like a watercolor octopus, and that sounds cool. He wanted it on his neck, which seems fine. He already had something on the other side of his neck. Boneface talked him into kind of a black and white thing. I didn't like that tattoo that much.
I didn't either. It only had three tentacles. It was a triptopus.
It lives on top of the submarine. It's always eating pie. I felt like a lot of the octopus's anatomy was lost, which is weird because octopuses kind of don't have anatomy. But you could tell from a couple of the sticky outy tentacles that it was supposed to be an octopus, and that's fine. The bottom three were... Oh, wait. The winner was Pins and Needles, who we didn't talk about yet.
Oh.
They did a vulture. It looked great. That was a freehand vulture.
It was a freehand vulture. It looked almost photorealistic. It was great.
A lot of the teams kept arguing, like, the guy who would draw on, the other person's like, you put in way too much detail. I'll never have time for this. Which is weird, because if you, like, look at comic books, you have the penciler.
Right.
And then the inker. And the inker just goes over what the penciler does and either adds or subtracts detail.
Right.
And brings it to life. And that's kind of what was happening here. There's the person who freehands it. That's the penciler. Then the other person comes in and literally inks it. So you have lots of power to ignore detail.
Right. And let's see. The
bottom three were Black Spade. They did a phoenix that I thought looked fine, but Oliver Peck did not like the details of.
Oliver Peck didn't like that they didn't finish filling in some of the flames at the bottom of the phoenix.
He is very concerned with line work and precision, which is great. That's what I want. What I like in a judge on a competitive reality show is somebody with a specific thing. Like, there was a show where people made custom-made furniture. It was hosted by the rapper Common. I'm not making any of that up.
No, it's true. We watched every episode of it. It's really kind of sad.
It was a fun show because you don't get to see people making furniture that often.
Yeah, I mean, full-on desks.
One of the judges was very obsessed with the rules of furniture, which I didn't know there were, but like...
Right. If your chair seat is more than 17 inches tall, that is not a chair.
Desks have to be between this height and this height. And he knows these rules, and also he can demonstrate. All right, he would say, sit on that bench. All right, now use that desk. Oh, you can't, can you? Because you made it wrong.
Yeah.
Or like...
That guy was a good judge. He was annoying, but very...
Right.
But right.
Or even on So You Think You Can Dance, Mary Murphy is a shrieking monster... Until she's judging ballroom, in which case all of the gimmicks turn off and she gives incredibly detailed comments about where your feet were and how you were holding your hands, and it's awesome.
But she is a shrieking monster and I cannot stand her.
It's kind of why we're not watching this season. And I feel bad because I love that show. Also, the kids' season turned me right off. But I like that Oliver Peck is super about the details, and I will look at the tattoo and say, that's fine. Then we'll like, well, let's go in with a micrometer. Oh, That's patchy. The next team that was in the bottom three was House of Monkey. That's Lalo and Picasso, who don't seem to get along at all, but I think are super fun. They did a cow skull with a cactus and some stuff in the background. And the stuff in the background was badly colored and a weird color.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed to be there. It was a good cow skull.
It was a good cow skull, and Picasso is the one that drew it. And I really liked the drawing, but then when his buddy...
Lalo
came in, Lalo was like, oh, I'll put a blue sky behind that, and we'll put some little flies in it, and it really cartoonified it.
And meanwhile, Picasso was out putting in his teeth, his fangs, for the final judging.
Well, Picasso was, even when he saw him tattooing, Picasso was like, oh man, I didn't draw that color in there. I don't want that color in there, but I gotta let him do his thing. And no, you don't.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like on Boneface Inc., Hobo Inc. would say, no, not that blue, this blue. And Boneface would go, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
The other team in the bottom three was Classic Trilogy, who did some flowers on a butt, and they were... okay, flowers. The Black Dahlia displeased Oliver.
He said, yeah, they were fine flowers, but they were super... If you think of yourself to yourself, what does a floral tattoo look like? Of a Dahlia and a couple roses. The picture in your head is what was on her butt. Yeah. It wasn't... It was static. It was fine. I'm sure that the person who got the tattoo is fine with it. But it wasn't creative or interesting in any way.
Now, the judges don't like Classic Trilogy at all, but also they haven't been near the worst.
No, so they can't really get rid of them, but they kind of don't like them.
So they just gave them a lecture of do something more interesting eventually. Although the way they keep bringing new teams in to replace old teams, I don't feel like we're really getting the whittling down.
Yeah, I don't even remember who the original teams are anymore.
Yeah, there's...
I don't like it. It muddies the season.
There are some attempts, I feel like, to make a new teams versus veteran teams plotline, where we see a lot of people discussing strategy. The strategy is, we're going to give a difficult tattoo to that team.
Yeah, because what happened with that season with the women on it was that someone came up with a strategy and it worked, and we got to see them discussing the strategy, and it was kind of awesome because it worked. But that was people who actually had a strategy.
Mm-hmm. But it's really not clear how this season is going to end.
I don't think it's ever going to end. I think it's just going to keep going. And eventually
like
the teams
15,000 years from now, all of Earth is going to be watching a tattoo show like in that one story.
5 years from now, we'll turn it on. It'll be the exact same teams that started this season. They're just going to keep going through the roster again and again and again.
Here's what I think they're going to do. They're just going to keep adding teams to replace old teams until Clean Rock 1's team comes in. Then they're immediately going to declare the season over and Clean Rock 1 the winner.
Oh, I hate that guy.
That really feels like their game plan.
He is the worst. But, there's a lot of people on this show that I feel have no bedside manner. And also, but Clean Rock is just... maybe it's just a screen persona. I'm willing to give him that, but judged by how he acts with the people getting the tattoos on the show, he is a terrible human being.
Now, remember, Josh was another guy they kept bringing back, who everybody on the show hated, but they hated him because he was so great with the canvases.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you want that on your ribs? Well, what if we did it over here instead, in this completely unpainful spot?
And they would always say yes, and then he would just go back to the rest of the team smirking like, I don't know what you guys were talking about. These people are great.
Yeah, that guy was good.
So, face off, House of Monkey went home. Goodbye, Lalo and Picasso. I think you guys are fun. I also think you don't get along, and there was no way you were going to win.
I thought they were getting along pretty well. I just don't think that... I think they both screwed up this challenge. Picasso should have stuck around... Instead of just letting Lalo do all the tattooing, he should have been there and he should have been kind of quarterbacking and saying, don't put that blue in there. But instead, he's like, oh, he's doing the tattooing. I got nothing to say about it. I'm going to go have a sandwich or whatever. And that got them thrown out.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Now that brings us to Face Off. Bum, bum, bum.
Bum.
There was a musical element to this week. The premise was Vivaldi, The Four Seasons, by which I mean they had a quartet play snippets of The Four Seasons. And then they kept cutting from that to the generic dubstep reality show.
Yeah, it was not good. There's not going to be an Emmy Award for sound editing for this episode, I'm afraid.
It was like,
sorry, guys. It was a little bit terrifying. And it was the only thing terrifying on a show which is about making monsters. So
it's about makeup.
I know.
Ethereal was down to 5 people because they had traded one away to Twisted Six. Twisted Six was down to 3 people because they lose every week.
All right, Twisted Six, now the tiresome 3.
One person from Ethereal, Andrew, gets sent from Ethereal to Twisted Six. Now each team has 4 again.
Andrew is the guy that was from the mask store. He made the werewolf that looked like a rubber mask. It was not great, but he did kind of redeem himself later, and I liked him. I thought he seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah, I don't.
So now he's part of the Twisted Four.
They're still called Twisted Six. I'm not letting them off the hook.
Okay.
I don't dislike any of the people on this season, but I think I've realized what this season is missing for me. My favorite thing about Face Off is when people help out each other. I'm like, look, although they're competitors, he's over there giving her advice, and she's helping him, and oh, and they're all getting together to help open that mold. See,
right. But with
the work is more important than the competition. I get all soppy about it.
He does.
But this year, because there's teams,
you have your teammates to help you, not those other guys.
Yeah.
Now, there have been a few cases, like when they were doing the horns, that one lady that does horns all the time told everybody on both team how to make them stick to someone's head.
And that's nice, and I like that, but there was so much more of it. But now, yeah, people help each other all the time, but they're on the same team, so it's expected. And
yeah.
It's just not.
So anyway, the challenge is, each team is going to do four makeups, and each makeup of the four will represent one of the seasons. And it's going to be involved in some kind of choreographed dance piece?
Yes, a contemporary piece by Travis Wall, who, yay, I love Travis Wall. He was a competitor on So You Think You Can Dance, then he got to actually choreograph some really good stuff on So You Think You Can Dance, and I think also Dancing with the Stars and the Oscars.
My notes on him.
Or Monty won't shut up about him.
The dance piece will be choreographed by Travis Wall, who got his start on So You Think You Can Dance. Apparently he has a fan base. Apparently it's sitting on the other end of the couch.
Faina also recognized him and was talking about him in the same tone of voice I do. Because, you know,
Everybody likes him because you've watched him grow up and mature as an artist and a creator.
Yeah, we saw the beginning of him. And he's doing good work, and good for him. I will say, he was not a great judge of special effects makeup.
That is not his field of expertise. He doesn't have to be.
The dance also didn't look great. The dances never look great, because all the time you're trying to get a look at the makeup.
Yeah.
And in this case, each dance, they had like the two summers dancing together and the two autumns dancing together, and each was bathed in the light of that season.
Right.
But that meant spring was bathed in a green light, and both of the spring looks had green skin.
Yeah, it was the lighting on the dance number was really, really offensively, infuriatingly terrible.
You couldn't make anything out. And it was very short dance, too.
Well, yeah, they didn't want to have to pay the rights to the music. You get to use one measure of each season.
Yeah, I imagine people who really know Vivaldi were furious at how edited that piece was. So at this point, Ethereal Effects has 3 women and 1 man on it, whereas Twisted Six has 3 men and 1 woman. And I mentioned that because people kept saying how this was going to be a beauty makeup challenge, and I thought, oh, maybe beauty makeup will benefit the women?
Sure.
It kind of didn't turn out that way.
It didn't really seem to.
There was only one guy.
I mean, you got to learn a beauty makeup in makeup school, regardless of gender.
Yeah. We only had one guy saying, I've never done beauty makeup before. But he was saying that in the sense of, So I'm really excited to do this because I want this piece to be about my mother or whatever it was.
Right.
As opposed to some seasons where it's like, I've never done beauty makeup before, so I'm not even going to try.
You have some strong feelings about that. I'm going to keep you away from my eyeliner.
The guy with suspenders, whose name I can never remember.
That is... You mean the guy that did Winter? Joseph?
No, he did Fall. He's a tall guy, he has suspenders.
I think it's Phil.
He was saying while during application that he knew from the eyes up he was going to have perfect edges, but he was a little worried about his side and bottom edges around the face, because most of the, he didn't do any face stuff, he just had a cowl. And the way that worked out was just shockingly terrible edges.
Okay, first off, his cowl, the leaves on it didn't look like leaves. They looked like
pie crusts. Yeah,
you know when you see a nice autumn pie that has the leaf shapes.
Yeah, they were leaf shaped from the front, but they were also like a half inch thick.
Yeah, they were super thick. They looked like cookies or something glued to his head, which I'm in favor of. You eat cookies in the fall sometimes.
Sure, I guess.
That's the big pie baking season is the fall.
All right.
So I was trying to give him a break that way, but the rest of the makeup wasn't attached to his face, so it just looked like he was wearing like a yellow painted hoodie that was kind of loosely adhered on the sides. There were huge, I mean, it wasn't just that there were lines where it was glued down. There were gaps where you could see the guy's chin underneath where the makeup had come off.
On the side, it was just peeling off.
And this is before they danced.
It was really, really bad.
Mm.
And he knew it was going to be bad, but man, dude, that was really bad.
And it wasn't great from the eyebrows up either.
Yeah. So, ethereal effects. Let's work through this.
Okay, well, give me a sec.
All right.
Let's start with...
We're starting with ethereal effects. Their spring look was a whole bunch of green stuff.
Their spring look, I believe, was the one with the ferns.
Yeah.
And those were beautifully carved, but poorly painted. So it was like a crown made of ferns.
Ah, crown of ferns.
Crown of ferns. And it was all painted a flat one color of green that made him look kind of like either an asparagus or the Jolly Green Giant, because his skin was also green.
Yeah, the judges liked it a little.
The judges liked it close up, but far away it did not read.
Yeah. Their fall look was by Faina, who I think is one of the front runners.
And it was beautiful.
She had like everything. She did beauty makeup. She spent hours on her beauty makeup, and it showed using standard fall colors. She also did kind of a leaf crown, but it looked like a leaf.
Yeah, she did a leaf crown. The skin colors were all like burgundies and browns, and it was really beautiful.
Yeah. Hers was my favorite on ethereal effects, and possibly my favorite of the whole night.
Now, ethereal effects makeup, he was trying to do a thing that looked like the Fortress of Solitude.
You mean Winter.
I'm sorry. I meant Winter.
Yeah.
I was reading it.
The Winter.
Their Winter. Well, first off, he looked kind of scared because I think they pulled his skin back too much or something.
Yeah, his eyes were kind of bugging out.
I don't know if that was the model or the makeup. Another thing was that before it was painted, it just looked like a blooming onion.
Yeah. It was just a whole bunch of ice crystals like the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah, but they were all square.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan.
And they were kind of sticking up, and then they made, instead of doing a full-on face makeup, he made little, like, tiny ice cube, ice-shaped things he glued on. It wasn't terrible. It kind of, for some reason, reminded me of that BBC production of Mr. Norrell.
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell,
but I'm not sure.
All right.
Anyway,
now we're
going
to move on to the next one. Rias.
Hmm?
When I say summer, what do you think of?
Starfish in a fright wig.
Absolutely. Well, that's good news for ethereal effects, because that's what they did. A big old starfish on the forehead, and a fright wig right behind it, looking like Professor Irwin Corey.
Yes. It was done by Kirsten. She explained that she was trying to make the wig look like a wave, and that when she thinks of summer, she thinks of the beach.
So, like, she painted the fingertips dark blue and then fading up to white at the shoulders to try to show a wave crashing up
and
the arms.
The arm and hand painting was beautiful.
But the concept made no sense.
The starfish was beautifully made, but why?
And
the fright wig.
There were some weird lines below the eyes, and the starfish came down onto the bridge of the nose for no apparent reason.
It was unfortunate.
Yeah.
But the fright wig is really what destroyed that look. It did not look like a wave. It did not look like the sun.
It looked like her cowl had not come out. So 2 seconds before she went on stage, she said, "Oh God, put this." And then when she explained that she had taken another wig and made this out of it,
the judges were horrified.
Yeah.
And sad.
So that's ethereal effects. Some okay looks.
Yeah.
One look I really liked.
Yeah,
some bad looks.
One that was good. Their spring asparagus look was acceptable. I think if it had been painted better and had more contrast, it would have been beautiful.
Yeah. Now, Twisted Six.
Okay. Now, for their spring costume, the new guy, what's his name again?
Andrew Anthony, something like that.
Yeah. He just made a cowl that looked like a rosebud. Stuck it on there. I feel that it did not have enough glitter on it, but
I said that at least 12 times.
Said that 12 times during the episode because I feel that it should
have
more glitter.
You say that about everything, though.
I do.
You say that about the dog pretty frequently.
Well, yeah.
He basically did a flower lady, but it looked great.
It was beautiful. It was delicate.
Really well sculpted.
When you saw the top of her head, you saw the entire inside of the rose. It wasn't like he tried to cheat it or anything.
The judges gave him credit for that because allegedly he knew during the dance that the top of his model's head would be pointed towards the judges. I don't know that he knew that.
He didn't know
that. The contestants did not ask a lot of questions about what sort of dancing would be involved.
No.
But it looked great.
Their summer costume was the person listening to the music was reminded of, like, grass and wheat and stuff blowing in the wind.
She was reminded of Van Gogh on the grounds that it's art.
Yeah, that's kind of it. And so she did this headdress that was kind of horn-shaped a little bit. It was supposed to be wheat, but it didn't really have the right colors. Some of it looked like kale, but it was a nice shape, and there was a lot of stuff going on in it. The judges really liked it, and it was certainly much better than a starfish with fright wig.
She did one really interesting thing where her cowl, the edge would not come down right, so she deliberately cut it in a jagged pattern and painted it so it kind of looked like it was on purpose. I don't think she fooled the judges, but I think the judges liked it.
Their fall look was the sad pie crust we discussed earlier.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to go through your comments on the winter look, and then I'll go through my comments on the winter look?
My first comment on the winter look is in all caps with several exclamation points. That comment is, "Oh, hell no!"
It's very bad in almost every way.
Yes.
The most immediate thing that stood out to us is the ears.
One of which was almost on the forehead. It was so far around to the front of his face.
It was also on his temple, which is above his eye.
Yeah.
The other one was on the side of his head, but also that high. Nowhere near where actual ears go.
No. And he was supposed to be an elf. There were supposed to be pointy ears, but they were sad and flappy.
He also had a brow that came all the way down
to his nose,
which was actually making one of his eyelids droop down. I had that problem myself, but I don't think this was on purpose. It made him look like a Neanderthal.
And it was the head mask, the cowl itself was just a misshapen lump.
It looked like a slightly melted Frankenstein head.
I thought it looked like a souffle that had fallen.
Okay.
Like a half-fallen souffle.
Like he spent some time sculpting snowflakes and sticking them onto his sculpture. But then he painted the whole thing pretty much monotone white, except for two trees he put on, because when you can't think of anything else to do, do a diorama on somebody's head.
My exact quote on that was, "It looks like a misshapen cake with a couple of pine trees from a miniature railroad stuck to it."
It really did. And then,
to cover the edges, he used some kind of white fur that I think came from the fright wig on the summer thing.
And it just gave the guy mutton chops?
It just gave him, like, yeti mutton chops. And they didn't make up his face, so it...
It was
the
just
wig
a
and
giant...
cowl and everything was white, but he was flesh tone, and they put extra blush on his cheeks.
So it was just like a giant marshmallow sticking off the guy's head with two trees sticking out of it. Then it gets down to his face, pink skin. It was just
They
terrible.
Did give him some lip gloss, and it was the worst makeup I have ever seen on a face-off. I think we can agree on that,
yeah.
Can't we? I mean...
There was no clue of what his plan was.
It is the only time I have ever seen Glenn Hetrick laugh out loud at how bad something was.
What happened
there? He tried
there,
not to, but...
What happened there was the judges are going through their close-up comments, which I love, because they're usually not, you know, quipping. They're saying, oh, that was interesting. What do you think he was thinking there? I actually like this part. I wish he'd done more of that. They get to this guy, and Travis Wall, who has said nothing, says, "I think there's something wrong with the ears." And there's a pause, and Glenn says, "Oh, you think?" And then just starts laughing.
Yeah, and they don't usually, the judges usually are able to keep it up.
But, man.
Dude.
You
have to look this up on the internet and look at pictures of it, because it is...
There'll be a picture in the show notes, because I took a picture.
Oh, yeah, you did. I remember. I was laughing hysterically while you were doing it, because I could not believe the television was paused on that monstrosity.
Glenn called it a monkey-haired Christmas tree yeti.
Yeah.
So, the two teams were declared a tie, and I think that's because, overall, they liked Twisted Six better, but Joseph had to go home for that winter look.
Yeah, there was no surviving that winter look. There is...
So, the winner was KC... She did the
wheat fields.
Yeah, the wheat fields, and fine.
No, they were beautiful. Yeah. I think that the autumn one was better, but I wasn't seeing it up close.
Yeah, and the person who went home is Joseph. And I'm sorry, Joseph, I got nothing against you, but oh my, you can't put an ear on the front of the head that far up and expect. Oh God.
Yeah, Joseph. I know that you want to, like, go on to teach makeup to youngsters and stuff. I think that's great, and I think you should absolutely do it. But I don't think maybe going into the movie business is good for you.
Well, he never had an idea. And with this show, if you don't have an idea in your first 30 minutes...
You're screwed.
Yeah
so that's true. I
when
couldn't
Mr.
do
Westmore
it.
Came in, Joseph was just like... And then I was thinking maybe this or this or this, and he's just kind of trailing off because he knows he has no plan. And he just never got it together. That'll happen sometimes.
Yeah.
I did like that Travis Wall bucked him up by saying, as somebody who lost on a reality show, which he did, you can still have a career.
Yeah.
You can still be successful.
Yeah, and I hope he does go on, because I think it would be awesome to have somebody out there teaching, like, theatrical makeup to kids. When I was a kid, I got that book out of the library where they teach you how to mix oatmeal with Elmer's glue and make yourself look like a leper.
You get the how to do the Phantom of the Opera. The answer is scotch tape on the nose.
Yep.
So I think Lon Chaney must have had much better scotch tape than I did, because my nose would never stick.
But yeah, I would love to see somebody going around at Halloween and teaching school kids how to do that. That sounds like a lot of fun. So good for you, Joseph. I hope you find a way to make that happen, because it's an awesome idea.
I hope that the show isn't mad at you, and at some point they bring you back for something. I think that would be sweet.
Yeah.
This is a show that cares a lot about its former contestants.
Yeah.
But this season of Face Off, I don't think it's just that I'm not seeing the camaraderie.
No, there
this
have
is not
been
working
some
for me.
Very... I don't know what's up. I think maybe they're decided to get contestants this time to try younger contestants who are less experienced, maybe?
They had that really...
Oh, they did have the Hawaiian shirt guy.
Yeah, and he scrubbed
out
pretty
quickly. Yeah, I don't know.
It's possible that they're running out of people who can do special effects makeup.
Really? I don't think so.
Well, I mean...
Ooh, maybe I'll be on some year.
People are coming straight from the Savini School.
Yeah?
Like, they know where to go to recruit people who want to be on television.
It's true, and a lot of the ex-Face-Off contestants are people I see doing the horror movie convention.
Yeah.
Which is a cool stepping stone for them.
Well, yeah, if you're a mask sculptor, even if you don't win the season, you can sculpt a cool mask and go to Crypticon and say, hey, look at my cool mask.
Well, they're also teaching classes in how to sculpt cool masks.
Yeah.
Which I love. I think that's one of the cool things that you can do at horror conventions. Etc.
Yeah.
I'm running out of words. It's getting late.
Yeah. So, to sum up, Bachelorette, nearly done. Thank God. Really quickly, Bachelorette had those commercials for Bachelor in Paradise.
It was terrifying. Their commercial angle is Bachelor in Paradise, it's coming back. And they're like, and it's like people's internet quotes, like, my life was almost over when Bachelor in Paradise went off the air for 2 weeks. And
they
I'm
show
like,
all
someone...
these tweets from people who were sad at reports that Bachelor in Paradise might be canceled. But no, good news, everybody. We're still doing Bachelor in Paradise.
And all I can think of is somebody got raped. You shouldn't be doing Bachelor in Paradise right now. You should cancel the season.
Like, just slink away. Come back later. When the heat dies off, they're going to use some of the footage from before the rape. Those contestants will be on this season.
Yeah. That is not cool. I do not want to watch a show with a rapist on it.
I don't... There are two reasons I don't want to watch a show with Corinne on it.
Well, first off, I don't
like
watch Corinne on it.
And I don't want to watch Corinne thinking, oh, I bet she's 3 days away from being raped in this scene. This is sure fun.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You can't... All right. So...
Offensive. Thumbs down.
We are about done with the Bachelor series of products.
Hooray!
Still enjoying Fortune Fire. I like everybody on that show. Still enjoying Ink Master. I hate everybody on that show. Face Off. Downer of a season.
But I still like the show. I'd like to see... The judges do some stuff on Face Off.
They did do
that
one.
They did have
that
one judges challenge that was fun.
I loved the judges challenge on Face Off, where the judges were given like a team of three people of old contestants and they had to create something. I would like to see that on more shows.
Yeah, like, I like shows where people have to create things.
I would like it on Fortune Fire if those guys. I mean, they don't all forge things, so maybe it would be like the Master Chef.
Well, Doug could be the host.
It could be like
the other three aren't have forges.
Doug has a forge?
No, Doug's the one that doesn't have a forge.
The host doesn't have a forge either. Well, here's my proposal. You know how the Great British Bake Off has those masterclass episodes where it's just Paul and Mary and they say, here was the challenge. Here's how I make a Christmas pudding. And they kind of yuck it up. And
yeah. Just, I'd like to see a Forged in Fire version of that.
Yeah, I want an episode where each of the regular judges says, you know, hi, I'm Jason Knight. Here is my forge. Let me show you around. I'm going to show you how I make a knife in my signature style.
Yeah, or what if they did a show where they do like a random episode of Face Off where Glenn Hetrick says, this is how I go about designing a monster.
Yeah.
Or V. Neal is like, here's how you do a beauty makeup. Well, that was kind of sexist.
Wow.
That is not what I meant. That's not what I meant at all. What I meant is that I consider the makeup she does in Tim Burton movies to be beauty makeups because I'm goth.
I think that will close it out for tonight, and we'll see you again next week.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye.